Okay, so we're Melachim Aleph. Melachim Aleph, Per Chaf, approximately Pasuk Lamed Hay. So we're kind of in the middle of a story, but we're a separate part of the story. Okay, so what's happening here? So we have this war. So this King Ahav, okay, is a very bad king of the Jews. And what happened was, is that he was like the, I guess the rival or something like that to Eliyahu. Okay, that was the whole story with the whole thing of Har Carmel. That was Eliyahu versus Ahav. Okay, so Ahav was the king at that time. So he was very bad. Okay, and what happened was, so there was a time, there was a war basically, that even though, Ahav was bad, Hashem told him basically there's this king Ben-Hadad, who's the king of Aram, who was basically going to war against the Jews. And Hashem told to Ahav through a Navi that basically he was going to win the war, that the Jews were going to win the war against Ben-Hadad, even though many of the Jews were bad and were on the side of Baal, but at the same time they were Jews. There were these 7,000 Jews who never worshipped Baal, and a lot of the Jews, I guess saw the truth after the whole incident of Har Carmel. So basically, he says, there's going to be a war. And Ahav said, and you're going to win. Ahav said, really? Who's going to be the general? So he said, you're going to be the general. So sure enough, Ahav was the general. And it turned out that the first time they won the war, and then basically Ben-Hadad and Aram, went back and got more troops in the round two of the war. And after round one, they said, of course God won, because he's the God of the mountains. And this was on a mountain, but we'll fight them on the plains, and then we're going to win. So Hashem said, because he said that, so I'll show them. That would be like a Kechel Hashem, because he's just making God like another idolatry, one of these things. Because of that, so I'll show him, and we're going to beat him on the plains, and sure enough, we're going to destroy him. And sure enough, the Aram got, buckled down with all their troops, tons of troops, and sure enough, they won again. The Jews destroyed a lot of them, and many of them, and the Navi basically told Ahav that he was going to win, and he was going to hand over Ben-Hadad into his hands, right? So that's what happened. And then, so they destroyed a lot of in the second battle, so the Jews destroyed a lot of the army of Aram, and then more of them ran away, okay? More of them ran away, and what happened is a wall basically fell on 27,000 people, okay? And Ben-Hadad kind of managed to slip out, and he was safe, and he ran into some inner chamber in the city. Okay, so this is basically this miraculous victory. Everyone's almost destroyed, and Ben-Hadad alone is the one guy, or whatever, who's the king of Aram, he's safe. And then basically, he's hit. I mean, he's obviously a dead man, because his army just got totally beaten. He's hiding in some inner chamber or whatever. So his basically servant said, let's go and try to appease. We heard that the kings of the Jews are very kind kings, and we'll go and try to appease them, and we'll see if it works. So sure enough, they went, and they kind of dressed in sackcloth, and they said, we want to make peace with you. We'll give you back the cities that our father took from the Jews. And, basically they appealed to his, mercy. And sure enough, King Ahav says, okay, fine. He's my brother. I'll save him. Let's make a treaty, and everything is good. And that was a chay. That was a bad chay, because Ahav, after all, the whole thing, this whole miracle, was basically to give over Ben-Hadad and Aram into the hands of the Jews. And it would be a Kedesh Hashem that they totally wipe out the enemy who were making fun of Kadosh Baruch Hu, saying he's just a god of the mountains, right? So that was what happened. That's the backdrop here. Okay, so Ahav did this chet, though, that he didn't. He is up to him. He had the ability to basically win the war for the Jews. That was the final step. Knock out the general. It was all there in the bag, but he didn't do it. Okay.
Ahav is the one who challenged Eliyahu?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. He was the king at that time. Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He was the time Eliyahu told Ahav, we're not having any rain for years. And yeah, they were the guys who were, up against each other. Okay. So now what happened is like this. So now Hashem wanted to give rebuke to Ahav. Okay? Basically for doing this. And because Achav did this, that he didn't kill Ben-Hadad, it's going to be a big trouble. Okay, it's going to be his end, and he's going to get killed and all that. So the way he did it is like this. He took a Navi, and this part we also started to do, but basically he told a Navi went to his friend, another Navi, and he says, hit me. Okay, give me your best shot. Okay? So the other Navi refused. I'm not going to have a Navi. So sure enough, what happened is, he says, because you didn't listen to the call Hashem, because a Navi tells you to do something, you got to do it. Because you didn't listen and hit me, you're going to go, a lion's going to eat you. So sure enough, a lion went, yeah, eat him. Fine. Then he says, told another Navi, another person, okay, hit me. So sure enough, the guy hit him, and he was all bloody. Okay. And basically, part of the lesson is, this is what we talked about last week, is the lesson is there's no place for just pure mercy. Okay? That was Ben-Hadad's mistake. Achal's mistake was he was merciful on his enemy. But there's no place for mercy. And mercy is a good meter in general, but mercy against your enemies, like they say, the Chazal say, the Marakolam Rachim ala Rasha, is Sofo Leos Achzor to Tzadik, or something. I forget exactly how it goes. But basically means the Rachmanis to a terrorist, for instance, is really Achzarias to the victims of the terrorist who he's going to go and kill. So you can't just follow your motion of mercy, because it's going to lead you to be merciful on somebody who really you have to be cruel to. You got to destroy him and wipe him out. So that was part of Achav's mistake, is that he was merciful to Ben-Hadad, which was bad, because he's the enemy, and he's the king, and he's going to destroy Jews. So part of this lesson from this Navi was, the Navi's mistake was that he wouldn't hit the other Navi. You think, I'm not going to hit a Navi, how could I do such a thing? I have to be peaceful and merciful, I'm not going to make a Navi bleed, you know? But that was the Dvar Hashem, was you have to hit the Navi, and there's a time and place for going against your mercy, and for hitting even the Navi, and for killing Ben-Hadad, and for instance, the Shaul's mistake was that he wouldn't kill Agag, and then Shmuel came and took a sword and chopped him in half. So there's no Agag.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, they don't teach you that in school.
I guess not.
Yeah. Yeah, it happened. So,
Shmuel is like...
There's no such thing as that. That's not a Jewish idea, you know. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't do such a thing. I mean, that's what it's teaching.
I guess not.
There's no such thing. Look, there is true. You may not, nature is that way, but bottom line is when the time calls for it, there's no place for just that thing. I couldn't kill a fly. There's such a thing as that, but it's an imperfection. And Shaul lost his kingdom for that, and this is what Achav is getting punished for, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's this Navi had a lying away then because of that kind of a thing, you know. Okay, so then what happened is, now we're up to for today. So now what happened? So why did he want the other Navi to hit him? What's the point of having blood, a bloody face or whatever, right? Okay. So now what happened is like this. He was bloody, and he went, so now the Navi, who was bloody, he went to the king. He approached the king Achav. And he put, this is in Pasuk Rama Chas, Vayelech Navi Vayamor Amelech HaLadarach. That's Aleph Chaf Lamechas. Vayischapes ba'efer ba'afer al enav. So he basically he ripped like they say like a band or some sort of a covering over his eyes so that the king wouldn't recognize him, like some sort of handkerchief or something. So he was like bloody and he had this like handkerchief over his face, over his eye, covering his blood, whatever it is. And now the king wouldn't recognize him because after all he's one of the Nevi'im, and the king would recognize him. So he basically disguised himself, and he posed as somebody who was coming from the battlefield. Right, that was part of the thing. If he wasn't bloody, the king would, what's he doing? You know, he's just a random guy, he knows what's going on. But he posed as someone from the battlefield. And he made up a story. So Vayi HaMelech Over, so the king was passing, he saw Gal HaMelech, and he was cried out to the king. Vayomer, Avdecho Yatzo V'Kerev HaMelchama. He says, your servant, went out into the war. V'Hinei Ish Sar, and a man turned to me, and he brought to me a prisoner. Okay, Ish, but it's a prisoner. And he said, Shemor Ish Azeh, guard this prisoner for me. And he pocketed, and if you lose him, if he gets away, right, and he pocketed, if he escapes, then you're going to be, I'm going to take you in his stead. Oh, kikar kesef tishkol. Or, if you don't want to give yourself in his stead, then you're going to have to pay a kikar kesef, which is a lot of money. Okay? So basically, fine. And he agreed. And sure enough, I was watching him, and I started doing this, started doing that, I got busy, whatever it is. Right? And he disappeared. Right? The guy ran away. Okay. So what should happen? Vayomer Elav Melech Yisrael. So the king said, Kein Mishpatecha, Atzach Haratzta. So you know your din. You paskened it. You determined it. You yourself agreed to the terms of the deal. Terms of the deal are, what are you coming to me for? Pasha. You just said that was the deal you agreed to. It's either your life or the Kikar Kesef. Simple. Okay. Vayimaher, Vayasar Saifar Malino. So he quickly pulled this handkerchief off his eyes. So now the king recognized he was a Navi. And now the Navi says to the king, so says Hashem, Yan Shilachta as Ishchem Yimiyad, because of the fact that you sent my enemy, the Ishmael Chamti, my enemy, away, the Hoysen Ashkatas Nasha, the Amecha Tahazama. So your nefesh is going to be instead of his nefesh, and your nation instead of his nation. Okay, you know this. Okay, you just threw it away. So the king went back to his house very sad and out of depressed, right? And he came to Shamron. Okay, so that's the story. So, if you recall the question, I think we left with this problem, and this is what we have to try to answer today, is what was the deal? Why did he have to do this whole story? I mean, it sounds like a very big, enactment to show him a simple point, right? The simple point is, listen, you agreed to, you shouldn't have, why do you not kill Achav? Ben Hadad, right? After all, Ben Hadad is the enemy. Just destroyed him. You were supposed to be killing him, and you didn't kill him, and therefore you're getting punished. What did he have to give him this funny mashal of, you're a prisoner of war, and you agreed to it, and it just sounds like, it must have been, and I think someone mentioned, maybe Chavi, you mentioned this point last time, is that it must have been that there's some reason that he would have a resistance to hearing the rebuke. There's some point which is not so simple, and he would have an argument or something like that, and through using this mashal, it shut that up. It basically prevented him from having any questions. I mean, that's the idea when you give a mashal like that, similar to when David HaMelech slept with Bathsheba and killed, or got, what's his name, Uriah? Killed, so Nathan HaNavi came and gave him that whole mashal of the sheep and the rich man and the poor man. The idea when you give a mashal, is that oftentimes the person's not able to hear a rebuke and they have excuses. So when you give a mashal, which is depersonalized, so then you could hear the point and then you could personalize it and see it. But it must be there's some, it just seems when it's a clear-cut point and there's nothing to say, what do you need to say? You don't need to give a mashal for. So it must be it's not so simple. It must be there's something which is not so simple about it. And this mashal must somehow be helping him to be able to see the point. And that's a question. Fill in the blanks here. Why is it not so simple? How is this mashal exactly on target getting to the point such that it's incontrovertible on the part of Achav, Yes.
How do you know I have something to say?
I'm trained to be able to tell.
Well, no, I think that whenever you're accusing someone of something, or they're on the defensive, they're not going to just accept it so willingly, usually, unless they're
right.
But I think he had to do something.
Yes.
To have him accept it,
Okay.
To show him what he did wrong.
Right. Okay. Okay. So.
And I think that this was the right thing to do because it made him to come to the conclusion by himself, instead of telling him.
Right. So, but what's the conclusion? Let's say, for instance, an example. Someone just goes over to someone and kills them. Right? And now you want to give them mussar. So now you'll say, let's say someone just walked over to someone and killed them. What do you think? That would be okay? No, that's not. I mean, it's certain things are just obvious. Presumably it's there must have been some rationalization or some excuse or some something which he could have used, and the mashal is somehow trying to prevent that, So I think you're saying, well, you just kind of have to fill in the blanks a little bit more. Like what, you know, he's resistant to taking Musar, but at the same time he did something wrong. And it's clear. So it must be it's not so clear. And he could have argued, or he could have, you know, something like that, you know.
He like agree. I mean, in the like muscle.
Yeah.
He like.
Did he agree
very
to that?
Straight out agreed.
I know. I know. Again. I know. I know. That's interesting because it says. Let me find that part of the pasuk. I mean, basically, I think the pasuk is in pasuk Chavchas. It says this is when they basically came to war the second time. Or maybe there's another pasuk, but it says, "Vayigash Yeshalukim, Vayomer Melch Yisrael, Vayomer Ko Amar Hashem." So the Navi said to Achav, "Yan Asher Amru Aram, Elokei Harem Hashem, Veloke Amakim." Since Aram said, "Hashem is the God of the mountains, not the God of the valley." I'm going to give the entire nation into your hands. So, I think that's it. So it doesn't exactly say, do you agree to kill Ben-Hadad? But it's basically, that's the point. Is the point is that, you know, in fact, one second, let me this is interesting, actually. Rashi says, because it says, Vayomer el Melech Yisrael, Vayomer. It's like a double lashon, Vayomer. Right? You see that in the Vayomer passage? So he says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Makom, Shenemar, Vayomer, Vayomer, Tzarech Lidrosh. Whenever it says Amir twice, you have to be Dorishan somehow. Amir Rishon, Amar Lo Benasati, Kol Amon, Ezebi Yadcha. First thing is, I'm going to give this whole nation into your hands. Amir Shnia, Im Yipol Ben Hadad, Biyadcha, Al Tachmal Olav. If Ben Hadad falls into your hands, don't have mercy. So that's why he's, and they're reading into it. That's the point, I guess, is it's not explicit in the pasuk that he made this stipulation, but I guess they're reading into it from Vayomer Vayomer that was like the clear, whether these words actually happened, but that was the clear message. Okay, it's not clear, I mean, when it, like a medrash, I guess, or is he saying that this is like pshat, that actually was transpired, or is like it was clear that that was the deal? That's what he was telling him, and there was no room
there
to doubt.
There wouldn't be like room for interpretation, like, oh yeah, like I still kind of beat him, even though I made a treaty with him, nothing like that.
Well, again, say it again.
Like, could he have said, well, like I did what I was supposed to do because, you know, I won, like we won the battle,
right?
Even though I didn't kill the.
Oh, I understand. Right.
Leader.
Yeah.
Is Rashi saying no to that?
It sounds like he's saying, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, it's a drash, but it sounds like he's saying that was the import of what he meant. Is he didn't just mean we're going to kill the nation. And I think the idea is because the nation is the king. The king is the head of a nation. You don't kill the king, you know. So he's saying is that was the import of, I mean, it's interesting it didn't say it in that many words, but it sounds like Rashi is saying that was the clear import of the, what was the thing, is that we're going to kill them and get rid of Aram. And get rid of Ben-Hadad. But it's interesting. I mean, we should take note of the fact that it was not explicit, it seems. Because this was the, right? I mean, I don't think he's saying it means that he actually said these words. I don't think Rashi's saying that. I don't think so. But I'm not sure. Vayomer, Vayomer, it's like,
In general, that type of Rashi is like hard to understand whether.
I know, whether it literally means he said that, and the pasuk is just leaving it out, or it doesn't mean he actually said it, it just means that was the clear implication of what was being said. One second, I'm just looking through that. Yeah, the simple pshat, they say, they say, this is David and Radak says, he said it twice. Ayomer, ayomer, lechazig b'libo, ki mei Hashem ha'teshuva. It's like, what type of chizok? Can you say it again? You know, it's like they repeated it. So it's basically like to emphasize this point. And the drash is, the emphasis was basically to show him, you gotta really go after him. But it's a good point, is that the mashal, if that's the point, the mashal isn't very good. If that was the point, this is an interesting angle here, is that if the point is that it was not explicit, and he could always wiggle out of it and say, well, I never agreed to that, then what's his mashal doing? The mashal isn't very good, because in the mashal, what was Achav's point? Alta charasta, you yourself proclaimed the din, but Achav didn't. So that doesn't, the mashal isn't a good mashal, right? If anything, you should have made a mashal where it wasn't so obvious and explicit, but it was an implicit acceptance, right? And, right? But not like this, so it doesn't really seem to be a great example if that was the deal, you know? One second, let me just look here. It is interesting in the story, it doesn't say that he said yes, if you look. I mean, at least in the Mashal. It says, guard this person. Right?
Yeah, you said he agreed.
I know, I just said that. I know. But it says, Right? So it does leave that detail out, right? So would you say in such a case?
The rest of the pasuk says,
"Kain mishpatecha tacharasa." Right, "Kain mishpatecha." That's your then. You yourself declared it, right? But now I'm just asking. In the way he told the story, he didn't actually say yes.
He went about doing it,
Exactly.
He also went about fighting the war, which was
yes.
Implying that he was
going to. Right, exactly. Right. It seems like you can't say that. You're like Rashi, the Radak says, "Ata chatachta din." You declared the din batzmacha. Shekibalta shmiraso. You accepted to guard him. Vineschayav slow, and you became chayav. So you may not have said the words, "I hereby declare that I accept," blah, 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 whatever, but the person who put you in charge of him said, "This is the deal," and you accepted. You took him, right? So Achav can't say, "Well, I never agreed to that." I mean, this is what the Navi told you, and you went to war. So don't say you never agreed to it. So perhaps you could say that. Say that he knew Achav was going to say, "What do you mean? I never agreed to it. You just told me, but I never said yes." Right? So if he just went to him and says, "Hey, you agreed to do it," Achav would say, "No, I never agreed." Right? But now you have the story, and Achav, unbeknownst that this is a mashal for him and that this is a Navi, he's just some guy with a bandana over his eyes or whatever, says the story, and he didn't say explicitly, "I accept," but yet Achav clearly says, "Pasha, you yourself accepted it." Right? Achav didn't say, "Well," he didn't say the words. Achav realizes that when it comes to din, you don't need to explicitly, verbally accept a thing. If you act in a way that clearly is an acceptance of the terms, that's identical with saying the words. You don't have to hereby swear that you're going to do it. That's what's meant. That's the way deals work.
Shtika koda?
Yeah. Shtika koda. You're accepting your... It's like the guy sets the terms, and then you take the servant. Which means you're accepting his terms. If you didn't like those terms, then don't take the servant. Then say, "I want to renegotiate the terms." But the action of taking it is an acceptance of the terms. Otherwise, don't take it. You don't have to take it. So that's, you can't say, "I took it on different terms." He says, spelled out the terms and you accepted it. So Achav clearly says, "It's Pasha, what kind of question are you even asking me? You yourself decided you agreed." So then he goes to Achav and says, "Well, listen, this is what you did." Now what's Achav going to say? So Achav may think to himself for a second, "Oh, wait a second, but I never agreed to it." Well, then the story basically says, "One second, yeah. You yourself, in that story the guy didn't agree to it, but you yourself, a moment before when you didn't realize this was about you, you were very clear that you don't have to utter the words, "I accept." It's simply clear by the fact that you went along with it, that that guy went along with it, you know, that's an acceptance. Now, why are you different exactly? So now you just disarm the Achav's line of defense. Right? That's a good idea. That's interesting, right?
So what did Achav agree to that he didn't keep?
Achav agreed, I guess, to killing, to basically the vanquishing the enemy, which means killing their king. Uh-huh. Their king, it doesn't mean to do half a job. I mean, the other is in a war, it would be like almost like when we killed, when we destroyed Iraq, we had to kill Saddam Hussein. It's like there's such a thing as a king. And a king, like a kingdom, is under the king. If the king's still alive, then the kingdom's still alive. Like, there's just, you only have to kill the son of a mob. You just don't leave guys like this alive, you know? It's just Hitler had to be dead. It's just like in anything, I mean, you don't vanquish, you don't kill the king. You leave the king around, the king's going to regroup. He's going to get troops. And that's what ended up happening later, and we're going to get to it later, and hopefully, a second later.
But it just
doesn't work that way. You got to get rid of the whole enemy, which is the king.
Just a side point. I realize what bothered me when you were saying that Shmuel cut Agag in half. It's one thing that you have to kill the king, but does it have to be in a bloody and violent manner? That's what bothered me when you said that, because I had never learned this before, and I was like, what? Shmuel cut him in half? You know, like, it's just like a visceral reaction to that. Like, okay, he deserved to die, and his whole nation deserved to die, but...
Right, no, I said it that way on purpose.
But why does it have to be in such a violent manner? I don't understand that.
It could be because the point is, when it comes to Reshus, there's no... You just gotta destroy it. Ayala, Fuchs.
Call from Fuchs.
Yeah. So it could be, it's like when it comes to evil, there's no room for being squeamish, and no room for hesitating, and no room for anything. You basically just have to say, this guy is evil. We have to destroy him. Just cut him in half. Just go for the kill.
I guess the times were much bloodier back then because they didn't have firearms or anything. there's no distance from
there's no...
Back when you had to kill people in hand-to-hand combat, there was no distance from killing.
I don't know. I don't think nowadays it would be appropriate either. Because I think the reason why you don't want to slice them in half is because you feel bad or you feel mercy or those emotions. And I think it's saying is when it comes to the situation, there's no place for those emotions.
So you have to go against those. This is why women do not have a chiyuv of mechias amalek, and also according to Rebbetzin Tzipora Heller, the reason why women are not post-gim. So anyway, because they would have too much rachmanis.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah,
they wouldn't be able to use that sword and.
Yeah,
perhaps, but despite that, I think it's important to. You know, like you said, examples, for instance, like you said last week, is like a same parenting. You know, not with a sword, but sometimes you have to be willing to discipline. I mean, you see, your mercy could lead
there's
you...
There's a difference between discipline and slicing somebody in half.
Yeah, there's a difference. There's a difference, but the point is the same.
I can handle the former, but not the latter.
Yeah, the point is the same, though. The point is the same. I mean, you have to know. You have to be able to put your emotion on the side and totally... doesn't mean that Shmuel is a cruel guy. But yeah, there comes a time and place to put that aside and to just go for the enemy. And it makes a bigger statement that that we totally destroy Rishos. Don't even think about it. And maybe the next king will think twice before he messes with Shmuel and the Jews, because Amalek is totally the enemy and we're going to destroy them in a brutal way. And he's...
So you're of the opinion that capital punishment actually prevents crime?
It seems like the Torah is. I mean, why do we have a capital punishment? I think that's why.
We don't have it today, but...
No, in the Torah we do, though.
Right.
But that's also because the guy doesn't deserve life anymore in terms of what he did.
No, but that's... Yeah, I think the thing is like this. That's a good point. Good question. But I think that in the Torah we don't really hold that man should be the judge of when a person does and doesn't deserve life. Because ultimately man could make mistakes, and man doesn't know all his motives, and man just judging a person based on one action. So the Torah does hold, in theory, man should not be judging another man. It's not really appropriate in a certain sense, but at the same time, you can't have a society that a flagrant sinner could simply just get away with it. It's going to destroy the whole society. The guy's going to just openly rebel and just do all kinds of Yisurim and everything and just flaunt his rishos, then you can destroy the whole arm. So we have to have a method to be able to destroy a person who is rebellious. So, for instance, that's why if you study the halachas of killing, it's very, very, very difficult for a person to get killed by a beis din. He has to be trying to get killed. Because he has to basically, they have to warn him before he does his crime. If you do this, we're going to stone you. And he has to say, I don't care, afal pikein, I'm doing it anyways. And do it within 2 seconds or whatever.
That sounds like
and if he doesn't do that, it sounds like suicide. But the point is the guy who is totally rebellious, mm-hmm. totally rebellious, flagrant, no concern whatsoever, will be killed. Anyone who shows even a little bit of remorse or a little bit of hesitation or a little bit, who doesn't do that, we're not going to kill. So, is that guy not bad? Look, God will decide. But the point is that we have to have such a thing as Misa and such a thing as Onsha, because to not have it would almost invite violations. So we have to have it every so often. Mm-hmm. And that's what they say. They say that in general, a Bezin would kill once every 7 years. On average. And then another position says, if I were on Bezin, I'd kill once every 70 years. And the other Shita said back to him, he says, no, by according to you, you're going to end up having lots of killers in Klal Yisrael. Because it's not enough. Once every 70 years, it's just not going to work as a deterrent, and then everyone's going to end up being sinful. So that's like, there's a balance. But if you study the halachos, it's like, Bezin is always trying to get a guy off. They're always trying to find some sort of an argument in his favor. It's like, there's a mitzvah. One of the Targum mitzvahs, you see the way that you're supposed to save him. Try to come up with ways to save him. So it's like, if you see, it's like almost like a paradoxical system. On the one hand, you have Mises Bezin. On the other hand, it's like you're always trying to not do it. It's like, what's the deal? Do you want it or not? Make up your mind. Right? But the idea is, no, we don't really want it. Intrinsically, we hold you can't. It's not appropriate. Just because he doesn't deserve to live, who are we to decide? Because he did one isser, one action of a crime, and that's it. But at the same time, we have to have it. So you just mentioned the capital punishment. So yeah, I think we have it is necessary as a type of deterrence. Not often, but there has to be some fear in the people of. Yeah, okay, fine. So, back to this. Yeah, so I was thinking of another point here. I mean, so I think, so we're saying, so one thing about this Ben Hadad point is that the Achav, he wanted to show him that he couldn't escape by saying, I never verbally agreed. I think there's maybe another point also is that there could have been two arguments that you came to the Achav with. Okay? One argument could have been, how could you leave our enemy alive? He's an evil man. He's going to kill other people in the future. How could you do such a thing? Right? Don't you realize he's Rasha? How could you be fooled by his friendly gestures and let him live? Don't you realize? How could you not kill terrorists? How could you make peace with Arafat? How could you, that's that kind of an argument. Like, how could you do that? Right? That's one type of argument that he could have had. But it could be that the Navi knew from Hashem, that's not a good angle. Why? Why is that not a good angle to come to him with? Seems like a good point, right? Just come and get to the point. How could he do it? He's the Rasha, he's the enemy. If you're merachim on him, he's going to end up killing Jews. How could he do that? Right?
I guess it does invite defensiveness.
Okay, yeah, why? Or how?
Because if you just lay it out like, yeah, what you did was a really bad idea, then people will be like, well, it wasn't such a bad idea because this and this, and then he's not going to be listening to why you're...
What
your points are.
Okay, good. So how do you get around that?
Well, I think he did it with the mushel.
Okay, and how does the mushel shift the focus? Besides the fact that it's a mashal, what is the mashal? What's the mashal's point? Or is the mashal's point that?
It takes the ego out of the equation.
Okay, that's the idea of mashal altogether. But besides for that, is the mashal showing him that you can't leave evil people alive? Because that's what I'm saying. So it's not talking about that, right? I'm saying that's what you would have thought. You would have thought, you go to a person, you say, how could you leave an evil person like that alive? He's going to kill, he's going to this, he's going to that. Right? But I think as Tamar says, true, is that That's not so simple. Listen, there's debates about this in this country. Do we save the terrorists? Do we negotiate with these guys? Do we not negotiate with these guys? What's the best way to properly vanquish enemies? Is it to just violently kill the kings, or is it to have peaceful negotiations with them? Right? Sometimes the answer is to violently kill them. Sometimes the answer is to peaceful negotiations. For instance, this happened back with Yaakov, you know, and his brothers, with Shechem, when they took Dinah. So basically, the brothers thought, they said, Hakizono Yasazah Hasena? Are you going to make our sister into a prostitute? Are you just going to be able to take her and just sell her off to the other nation? And they killed out the whole Shechem, right? But Yaakov Avinu says, how can you do that? You're going to get all the enemies around us. They're going to get rise up against us. We're a small little nation. And you can't just go out and flagrantly just start killing people. You're going to be crazy. It's going to, right? It's going to totally destroy us. But that was an argument. So what's the right thing to do? Do you just go out and kill, or do you make peace? It's not so simple. It's not so simple. Now, you may think that it's clear that the Arab terrorists should be wiped out, but there are a lot of liberals who argue the other way. And you could argue from today till tomorrow. You know, whether it's true and it's a proper position that we should kill them is not besides the point. When you come, if you come to Achav with that argument, it's not convincing. It's not a solid, foolproof argument. It depends. It's a subtle point. Whether that's the appropriate thing. He could defend this position. He'll say, listen, Ben-Hadad's the enemy, but after all, we'll make a peace treaty with Aram, and Aram's a strong nation, and we'll show all the rest of the world that we're a peaceful nation, and that we're a powerful nation. We destroyed all the rest of his army. We're just leaving him alive, and he'll be an ally, and whatever, and it'll be great, and, you know. He'd give a whole story, an whole speech about justifying his action. And what are you going to say? No, he's going to kill people? He'll say, no, he'll help us. We made peace after all. It's a peace treaty. That's what peace treaties are. Right? So you can't win that argument. You know, you can't win that argument. But what the Navi did was, he says, forget that. That's not the root. Right? What did the Navi say? What was the Navi's angle?
He's a prisoner.
Okay, but just because he's a prisoner still doesn't mean that you kill. Maybe sometimes you let the prisoner go?
I guess that's just what he had to do. Like, that was in terms of starting the battle.
You're right. But again, that was...
That was like the idea of starting the battle.
Okay. Yeah, spell that out a little bit more. I'm not sure.
Like, Hashem told him to do that.
Right, exactly. That was the deal. The point is that it's not up to you to decide whether you think you should kill Ben-Hadad or not. You are in this battle because God sent you on a mission, and He told you this is the deal. These are the terms, this is what you're going to do. It wasn't a battle that you, King Achav, decided to go on based upon your strategic idea of, well, how's the best way to lead Kadeshot to victory. If so, then you could start giving your opinion about what should or shouldn't happen. But that's not what happened. This was a deal where what initiated this war was Hashem's tzivui to you through the Navi to go and wipe out the people and make a Kiddush Hashem and destroy the enemy. Right? That was the deal. And the terms of the deal were you wipe them out and you vanquish them, and you're not leaving them off as an ally. We don't need an ally. The point wasn't to make an ally. Make an ally and to have another king who's on our side. The point was to destroy them and vanquish them and bring out a Kiddush Hashem. That was the deal. You implicitly accepted that deal. So there's no room. Once you say that, listen, this was the deal, you can't start arguing it's not fair. It would be like a guy signs a contract, and then you bring him to court, and you say, well, that's not fair. After all, it's not a fair contract. You got the better end of the stick in our contract. They'll say, listen, your name is on the dotted line, right? You signed, so you don't have to sign. You signed. There's nothing... Don't talk about it. We're not discussing fair now. We're just saying this is the deal that we made. You should have said that before you signed on. You signed the contract. So the muscle did is it basically shifted the argument away from good idea, bad idea to this is what you accepted. And I think this goes. I don't think that these are two different answers, but I think they go together. It shifts it to what you accepted, and then also within what you accepted. Ben-Hadad, Achav could have tried to wiggle out of it by saying, I didn't explicitly do it. The mashal was perfectly crafted in a way that wasn't explicit. But it's clear the implicit acceptance of an agreement is just the same. It doesn't really matter. You know. So once he did that, then Achav basically had an argument. And Achav noticed, didn't argue. Right, what did Achav do? So basically, he just went as depressed. Sad, sar vizaf. Sar vizaf, nasus vidavoy. Rucho sarimet. He's like.
Isn't it the same language from Mordechai in the Megillah?
Yeah, Mordechai is in the Melach.
Mordechai Yetzah Mifnei Melach.
No, that's Bilvash Tchei Yetzah.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, it's in Megillah where he used... Sakwayfer? Sakwayfer. I don't know. I don't think it had Lashon Zarasaf. Maybe it had similar words, but... Yeah, but basically what you see, though, is he was... He left depressed and saddened because he knew he had nothing to say. He was defeated. As there was the Navi could...
It's
not,
right? So yes. It's
not, you know, it doesn't.
It doesn't have Miguel Zester in it?
No, it's a ripoff. But for some reason, the Nach doesn't have Nach.
Because
you know why they have the Miguel Zester in the Torah? In between the...
In the Chumash Torah, they usually include
it.
Yeah,
right. For some reason. But the point is that... so basically, it worked. It worked. He didn't. He was totally defeated. He didn't have anything to say, and he accepted. He heard the point, you know. But that was the plan by the Navi, and that was again. It was only possible because he was able to fake out that he wasn't really a Navi, right? If you would have come up to him as a Navi, then his defenses would have been up. The way you get the guy is before his defenses go up, right? That's when you neutralize. Yeah, his ego point. Whoever said that, that's right. His ego is going to be defended. No guy likes being attacked. But when you do it this way, then you end up getting, you know, you get around it. All right, good. Is there a question? Okay, so I guess let's do now. Okay, so we'll start reading here tonight. I mean, next time, the next parak is like built upon this parak. But it's a totally different story. But it's built upon the state. Now you have Achav in this state.
Does he actually do tshuva in the end?
Well, we'll see. He goes back and forth. That's what's interesting. This next parak is kind of, you'll see, he's going to go up and down. So let's just read it, and hopefully next time we'll be able to. I mean, maybe we'll ask some questions, but also at least we'll get familiar with the thing, okay? So it's Perak Chafaf. Okay, and what was after these words? Kerem Ha'ilah Navos Israeli, Asher Yisrael. Eitel Hechal Achav Al Shamot. So this guy Navos, he had a vineyard near the palace of Achav. Okay? Navos, he had a vineyard. Vaydaber Achav al Navos Lamar. So Achav said to Navos, T'no li es karmacha, vayidil gan yarak, so give me your vineyard, and I'll make a garden. Because they say that was like a, someone in the Farshim say, that was the thing kings used to do. They had gardens near their houses. So give me your vineyard. And a vineyard, after all, is a chashuva thing. Vines, wine, right? Give it to me and make a vineyard and have a garden out of it. Because it's near my house. I'll give you back a better vineyard. If that's what you want. Or if you want, I'll give you money. I don't care. I'll basically just give me your vineyard and make it into a garden. This is an achla of my father's. You know, my forefather, my grandfather, my this, my that. It's in my family. I don't want to give it. Chalila, I'm not going to do that. Right? But I don't want to. And I guess he's not chayiv to. They say a king's allowed to take things for his... Just because he wants it, he's not allowed to. I forgot that. I don't know if the Farshim says that. You can't just take things without, like, if he needs it for his kingdom or something, but just because he personally wants to have it, the king's not allowed to do that. So none of us had a right to refuse. Again, he's Zarvisaf. Same language? Yes. Zarvisaf. Allah Dabar Asher Dibar Elav Navos Israeli. It's funny, it's pretty explicit, but he's basically very sad about, but Navos said, and he said, I'm not going to give you my father's Nachla. Ayishkel Amitaso, and he laid in his bed, Rayasav Espanav, he like, turns his face, like in the press, you know, depressed basically. He wouldn't even eat. He was totally. Yasid Panavardak says he turned his face to the wall. like looked at the wall. Basically, he didn't even look at anybody. He's totally turned inward. Atavoy love Izebel Ishta. Now, Izebel was very evil. Okay? As a lot of these stories. She killed many Nevi'im. She was really, really bad. Okay? Yeah. Maybe even, I mean, who knows, but maybe worse than Achav. I mean, it seems like she was kind of like behind the scenes, or not even behind the scenes.
Just kidding, it's
very
valid, right?
So, very love. Ma ze rucha chasara vein chol chalachem. Why are you so sad? And you're not eating? She told him. I'll give you the money, or if you want, I'll give you a different karam. I don't know if it's relevant, but he switched the order. He says, no, I'm not gonna. He left out the part also about my father's. You know, he just says, I'm not gonna give it to you. Okay, fine. I told my love, he's ever lish, though. Ato tasem luchal Yisrael. Is this how you're going to do, make kingdom, kingship, kingdomness, whatever, over the Jewish people? This is what you're going to do? Kum echol lachem v'yitav livecha. Eat bread, make yourself happy. Honey, I think lachos kenavos Yisraeli. I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. You'll be okay. Okay? This isn't the way to rule a kingdom, right? You have to be strong, not be to be depressed. You know, you can't be a leader like that. So Atichtos from Hashem Achav Atachton Mechosamo. She signed, wrote, and signed letters in her in his name. Atishos from Zakenim Elachorim Hashem Iro Hayoshim Al Mavos. And they basically sent it to these Zakenim. Atichtos from Lemar Kirutzum Oshivos Navos Boshan. Call a fast day, and basically a fast day where we'll look into the deeds of the Jewish people and see what's wrong. Like we'll say it's like Nes Tzara. And as they used to do on a fast day, they'd look in to see who did Averis. And you'll basically put Navos in front of the people. You'll have two false witnesses, evil guys against him.
This
is
Izebel's idea?
Yes.
Oh.
And you'll say, they'll say that he uttered a curse against Hashem and against the king. In this way, they'll take him out, they'll stone him, and he'll die. So they went along with it. They called the fast. And sure enough, they sat against him. And they testified against Navos. And they did exactly that. They stoned him. So they sent to Izebel saying, listen, he was stoned. When she heard this, go and inherit the vineyard of Navos, that he refused to give it to you with money. Because he's not alive, because he died.
Doesn't go to his children
after him? Oh, so that's what he says. That's what he says. The halacha is that if you rebel against the king, then your stuff goes to... It goes to the king. If you rebel against like Hashem, like Bezdin, then it goes to your that's why he says Be'erach the Elokim Umelach. Then he also cursed the king. Mm-hmm. You know, so this way it's like both. Lahikishmo Achav Kimeis Navos. When he heard that, Be'erachem Achav Ored this Elokim Navos Ve'edli Rishto. So then he went and he inherited the field. Okay. Lahim Dvar Hashem Eliyahu Tishbi Lema. So then what happened was Hashem went to Eliyahu. Go down to Achav. He named the Karam Nabasa Sher Yorad Shem L'Rishtam. He's in the Karam. V'dibarato Elof Leimar. Komar Hashem. This is what Hashem says. Haratzachta v'gam Yerashta. Are you going to kill and then inherit? V'dibarato Elof Leimar. Tell him. Komar Hashem. V'makom Asher Laku HaKlov Mesdam Navos. In the place that the dogs licked the blood of Navos, Yilaku HaKlov Mesdamcha Gamata. They'll lick up your blood also. Sorry. And Achav said, "Hamso asani oivi? Have you found me, my enemy?" Okay, they were like enemies. So, have you found me guilty in this thing? The Nesuda says, it's our fault. Right? It was my wife's fault. Vayomer matsasi, I found you. Yan is makerecha lasas harav in Hashem. Because you thought to do evil in the eyes of Hashem. You thought to do bad in the eyes of Hashem. Don't pretend like you're innocent here. I'm going to bring evil on you. And I'm going to root out after you. I'm going to destroy all the males in your family from the Jewish people. And the Sati is basically like Yeravam and Achia. You're going to make your family like the house of Yeravam and Basha. Because the evil, the anger which you caused, and you caused the Jews to sin. The Gamli Zevel Divar Shalem, and she also spoke to Zevel. A klov miyochelos Zevel b'chel Yisrael. The dogs will eat you. A meis la'achav ba'ir yoch l'chlovim. The dead of Achav in the city, the dogs will eat. A meis pasad yoch l'chashmayim. And in the field, the birds will eat it. Rak lohoya ke'achav asher esmakar lasos rabbinei Hashem. There was no one like Achav who did plan to do evil in the eyes of Hashem, Asher Yisata Oso Yizevel Ishto. That his wife Yizevel, like, seduced him to doing it. Right? She, like, trapped him or led him astray. Vayatev Ma'od Lelechas Achrei HaGilulim. It was very disgusting to go after the idols. Kechol Asher Asu HaMori, like all the Mori did Asher Hosh Hashem Rebn Yisrael. Okay? Vayikish Mo'ach Asher Ram HaYilam, and he heard this, Vayikra Begadav, he ripped his clothing. Vayasam sakal b'sara. He took a sack off. Vayatsom, and he fasted. Vayishka v'asak v'yalech at. And he went like slowly. Okay, he basically took it as a rebuke, and he heard the point. Okay, or Yava, maybe he went barefoot. Yeah, barefoot. Vayidvar Hashem el yotish v'leimar. Haro isa ki nechna achal milfamay. Did you see that achal was really subordinate? It really worked? Yan ki nechna mipanai, because he was subordinate, he subordinated himself. Lo avi hara avi amav. I'm not going to bring the evil in his days, but he may be no avi hara avesa. Will be in the days of his child. So it turns out he did tshuva, it seems. You know, at least partially. Okay, that's the parak.
Why did his children deserve that?
Good question. Okay, so why don't we stop here? I don't know, but we'll stop here. And we'll try to take it up next time. Okay, so you can think about questions, answers, how to analyze this parak. Like, what can we say about this parak? Alrighty?
Was it so easy for them to make it falsehood like that?